Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you've count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into another Behind the Bets podcast. I'm Doug Kazarian. We're taping this on Thursday, September 19th. Travis, how are we doing? How are you feeling about the NFL 2 weeks in?
I don't know what. There's so many injuries. I don't know what to think with NFL.
A lot of quarterbacks banged up. A lot of them out for some time. Obviously, Big Ben out for the year. Drew Brees out for an extended period of time, although not on the IR or whatever they call it. So maybe he'll be back sooner than we think. Eli's demoted. We have 221-plus point spreads.
Cam's possibly going to be out. Cam Newton. Like, is Taysom or Teddy going to get the start for the Saints?
Probably be Teddy starting.
But does he finish?
I want Taysom Hill to get reps if I'm a Saints fan. I like what he does. He's a change of pace for sure. The NFL is really hard. We're going to talk later with John Murray and do the bankroll bonanza. Very, very slow week for me. A lot of unknowns after 2 weeks. So I don't know what to expect. And I'm excited for a couple of these games. But, I mean, the lines are tight. I'm, Travis, do you hate me if I'm not going to be firing hard here?
A little bit, actually.
Yeah. I know.
The people need their picks.
Well, look, I have opinions in all these games. I'm in a bunch of pick-ems as well. And again, I will have some plays by Sunday for Bankroll Bonanza, but I'm just waiting for some line moves here. And it's just, that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. You can't force it.
I mean, you're a heavy hitter. Can't you go in and move the line yourself with some plays and then bet the other way?
Well, having done well on the Browns game Monday night, I'm actually just sort of spoiled. I want to wait for those types of games because that was a big one. So, all right. So let's get to Mr. Executive Director and then obviously Mike Clay at the end of the podcast. He has six props, including four tonight. So Tennessee-Jacksonville was not a barn burner, but now it is with four Mike Clay props. And do we know if it's going to be a color rush tonight, Travis?
I'm unaware.
I hope it is. So we'll get to all that, but a very in-depth pod, and obviously we're going to dive deeper onto what's going on with the Dolphins and in this week, the Jets.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
Boy, is it. And we had a nice discussion about Pat Narduzzi yesterday and Murray, this epidemic is just not going away, sir.
Yeah, I was listening to the intro just now. Did I not say anything funny during the 2018 season? Because the intro is just all clips from 2017. Was 2018, there was nothing good that we could put in there?
Well, you know, I didn't want to have to repurpose your name. So if we were going to update it, I wanted to still say Mr. Director.
Didn't want to pony up for
that. Maybe if I got to pick some more winners, I will be able to pony up and get everything this week.
How'd you do week two NFL?
Well, ESPN.com, we do picks in the column every week. Mm-hmm. Today, the college picks came out, and tomorrow the NFL picks come out. I've actually been a nice start. 12-7 in college, I believe 6-2 in the NFL, and with two winners Monday nights. Yeah. But the Monday nights don't count to the weekend records. I've actually like 8-2, if you will, on published picks. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, you can move the field goal post as much as you want. Bonanza, where I'm down 600, I believe. Mm-hmm. 500, excuse me, 500. I lost 100 last week. But
I gave Brent Musburger the Falcons plus 1.5, and then in the last man standing, station's last man standing, I kind of cheated. I just used the Browns for all my entries, Browns minus 2.5. So I got nothing to complain about from week two NFL.
Yeah, you said you cheated because the line moved, but about the contest line locked in.
I'm just trying to survive in advance to the next week. You know, it's hard to pick winners in the NFL. If they want to give me Browns 2.5, I'm going to take it.
Well, I'm with you on that. I actually jumped on -3 flat early in the week because I had a feeling the number would go up. And obviously it went up a lot because of the injury and the mono. But there were a couple freebies the first couple weeks looking back. We really should have been on, like, Ravens at the Dolphins week one. Browns on Monday night. I thought the Browns game was like a blow. Like, I sensed a blowout from the start.
Yeah, and really Cleveland didn't play that well.
No.
You know, it was just the Jets were so bad. No, you're talking about a team down to its third-string quarterback. That's just what's going to happen for the most part. But Cleveland could have played a much better game than that. I think Cleveland is capable of playing much better than they did on Monday.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens Sunday with the Rams. We'll get into that game. But did you guys take a beating on that Monday night game? Because from what I talking to odds makers is that you knew you guys were in trouble when the Sharps wouldn't even come in and grab +7 with the Jets.
No, and they wouldn't bite on the Jets, and we took a huge beating on that game. All the parlays, teasers, everything that was live from the weekend all went to the Browns, and we're probably going to be in a similar situation this Monday night with the Bears. I have a feeling that game is setting up similarly to the Browns-Jets game.
That's interesting.
Well, the public loves those road favorites. There's been a lot of sharp money on Washington. That's why you've seen that number go from 6.5 down to 4. The public will come in very heavily, both of the favorites in these primetime games. The Rams, for sure, already got about a 10-to-1 ticket count on the Rams. And then they're going to bet the Bears pretty big on Monday night. I don't know that it'll be as big of a decision as the Browns were last week, but I think it's going to be a pretty big decision for the books.
I kind of like the Redskins there.
The Redskins, I think I saw they're 1-16 at home on Monday Night Football since 1998. Now that's a straight-up number. And, you know, I've told you this before, but my family had season tickets to the Redskins for a long time. I'm from the D.C. area. That stadium will be about half Redskins fans, half Bears fans. Redskins fans have just given up on that franchise for the most part. So don't look at it like home field advantage.
I just think the Bears aren't very good.
Well, the Bears were extraordinarily lucky to win on Sunday. They got a gift there that I thought that call on Bradley Chubb was a terrible call. I think it was roughing the passer. And they put the second back on the clock, which I thought was borderline. I'm not saying it was a bad call, but it was borderline. And then they needed the 52-yard field goal. Chicago, very, very fortunate to win that game.
So I thought of our conversation that we've had on the pod a couple times, and I tweeted it out. Now, it looked like a very results-driven comment because of the Bears winning, but it wasn't. And I had the same thought. When these teams go for two, with a decent amount of time left, I think they're making the wrong decision. Now,
yeah, you brought that
31
up.
Seconds
You're the one that
left,
pointed that out to me. Yeah.
Right, with 31 mm-hmm. seconds left, I'm okay. I was okay with that. I wasn't adamant about it or anything like that. But these teams that go for two with a minute left is stupid, I think.
Yeah, you pointed that out last year, and I had never really thought about that, but I think you're absolutely right. Now, in this case, like you just said, I think there was such a small amount of time left. Denver, I believe, was correct to do that. Obviously, the Chicago, miraculous series of events there to win the game for the Bears. But, yeah, if there had been 2 minutes left, I would agree with you. I think they should kick the extra point.
Well, they basically say they go for the win, and they're not. They're going for the lead. And when you factor mm-hmm. in the combined probability of whatever percentage it is on the play you like, let's just call it 50-50, it's not a 50%. You have to factor in also the chance that they have and the probability they have, and it's compounded. You just multiply it, right? So it is very, not complex, but you can't just look at do we like our two-point conversion in a vacuum.
It's not going for the win. I agree. It's going for the lead. Now, if the game's tied with 2 minutes left, the other team could still win the game then, too, scoring in a tied game. So either way, you're not ending the game there. But you're right, though. It's not as simple as going for the win there unless there's like 10 seconds left in the game.
And it's funny, like 31 seconds even plays to the concept of like maybe we should kick it because they're going to be very conservative. I think they had one timeout. Chicago's more likely to be – not even more. Chicago's definitely going to be less aggressive if they're tied versus trailing, right? If they're trailing one, they're going to have to throw. Right. But there's a chance they just play for OT too.
There's a factor, too, that not the extra points aren't guaranteed anymore, though. I was talking to
Jay we saw Cornegay that on the play, actually.
Yeah, Jay Cornegay and I were just sitting around chatting on Sunday afternoon about the games, and one of the things I said to Jay was, you know, I kind of mocked it when they moved the extra point yard line back. I thought, oh, well, that's not going to make any difference at all. Who cares? I was totally wrong about that. You see extra points missed all the time, much more frequently than I would have thought.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point, and I, too, did not like the extra point distance being moved back. And I'm surprised how many more teams are going for two. I didn't think it would mean much. And you're right. The Broncos guy did miss the extra point once they had the penalty.
Yeah, and Chicago was offsides, but yeah.
And for those curious how the penalty yardage, it's a long story, but the refs interpreted the rules right in terms of moving it back and moving it forward. But you could also criticize the rules. But the rules were officiated properly. So we will let's get to the rest of the card. So any other games stand out from last week in terms of like big swing plays from the week ago?
A game that was really big for us, at least here at the Westgate, Detroit beating the Chargers was really critical because the early games didn't go our way. Obviously, everybody was on Dallas against Washington. There was a lot of money on New England against Miami, actually more than I anticipated, to tell you the truth. We did very well in that Detroit game, and really Detroit was lucky to win that game. The Chargers missed some short field goals. I think Rivers turned the ball over in the red zone late in the game. Chargers really should have won that game, and Detroit was able to pull it out. And that was a big win for us here at the Westgate. And then the Sunday night game, Atlanta, in spite of Matt Ryan doing everything possible to lose that game for the Falcons did come through. The late touchdown by Julio Jones, that was a huge win for the book here.
Yeah, the Nelson Aguilar drop was huge as well. And they converted like a 4th and 15, too, on that drive.
Yeah, they had like a 4th and 14. Wentz made a great play. The Falcons had a decent-sized lead, and all of a sudden, I think Ryan threw an end zone interception and through another interception. Ryan did not look like the Matt Ryan that we've come to expect over the years. Some very careless turnovers. I know that his final stats looked okay because he threw for a lot of yards, and I think he threw for 3 touchdowns, but some very careless interceptions from Ryan, which is not something I expect from him.
It's funny. If they lose that game, I'm like, they're done, and now they may be the favorites in the division because of the Drew Brees injury. So it's amazing how much anyone, myself included, can overreact.
Really a swing game this Sunday for both those teams, Atlanta and Indianapolis, both in strange divisions that are riddled with quarterback injuries and retirement from Andrew Luck, and that could be a real swing game for both of those teams, a real coin flip game.
It's funny you mentioned the Lions and really getting lucky. Now, that's interesting because the Chargers kicker was hurt. They were using their punter to kick field goals, and I can't bet on the Colts, given what Vinatieri said. He's like, I'm going to try to work through this. He's basically on tilt, right? He's got the yips, and I mean, I can't get involved on Indy when you have a kicker this shaky.
I'll mention Jay again. He makes us each make a pick for him every week, and I gave him the Colts, and I'm watching the game with him. I gave him Colts +3. Vinatieri's missing extra points left and right, and he's looking at me kind of cross-eyed, like, nice pick there, kid. But the Colts did hang on for us there.
Well, I was rooting for the extra point at the end because I needed to cover the 3 in the bonanza. So, and that's the beauty of gambling. You root against one team the entire game. Mm-hmm. Like Arizona, Detroit, right? In the week 1, you're catching 2.5. You're rooting for the Cardinals to come back. And then they go for the 2-point conversion to tie. Now you're rooting against them.
Yeah, I had a bet on Air Force on Saturday in college football. Obviously, I'm rooting for them the whole way. And then Colorado scores a touchdown. Or you wanted Colorado, or they missed an extra point, I guess, is what happened. Colorado missed an extra point, or they would have won by 1 point. Because they missed the extra point, the game went to overtime. So,
right, but the other team, because Colorado got the 2-point conversion to tie the game.
No, I think they just missed an extra point, and then the next touchdown they got the touchdown and the extra point. But either way, when you get to overtime in college football and you're catching points, it's always a weird situation. Like you kind of want the other, like if the other team kicks a field goal first, you don't want your team to score. You just want the game to end, stuff like that. Or like a better example, really, I had BYU +3.5 the previous week at Tennessee. And Tennessee gave up a long pass to BYU. BYU was down by 3, and they kicked a field goal with like 1 second left to force overtime. So even though I'd been rooting for BYU the whole game, I really wanted them to miss that field goal so it wouldn't go to overtime. Now, luckily, they won for me in overtime. Right. But that's a better example than the Colorado one, where I've been rooting for this team the whole way, and now they're lining up for a field goal to send the game to overtime, and I want them to miss it. And that only happens in gambling.
Only in gambling. So let's turn the page. Let's we got to start the week 3 conversation with these big favorites. And it reminds me, last week you were close to giving Mr. Musterburger that Miami play.
I was afraid if they got down like 42-0, that Brent would never talk to me anymore.
We had to queue up the clip from last week's pod. And you know what the final score was 43-0. So they did get
really
down that much. Yeah.
So I was able to show face with Brent this week. The Falcons came through for me. Yeah, it's hard to back Miami right now. You know, they've traded probably the 2 best assets Miami had going into the season were Laremy Tunsil, the young left tackle, and Minkah Fitzpatrick, the safety that was their first-round pick last year, and they've already traded both those guys away. I mean, the Miami Dolphins are doing everything short of just holding up a sign to the league saying we're tanking and we're looking to get high draft picks in 2020.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, you basically nailed the score. You said if they go down 42-0. I mean, this team, and look, I had to do four videos for ESPN.com, and I went 3-1. The only one was like, I was like, I got to take the points in Miami. It's still 18.5. I think those rules are done, and I wrote a piece for ESPN.com. I ask everyone to go check it out on the chalk section. Just how historically different this Dolphins is forcing you guys behind the counter to just kind of do stuff that's unconventional. I mean, you have to look at the spreads we have, dude. These are over three touchdowns in the same week. And that's the Jets game who are relegated to a third-string quarterback on the road against, you know, one of the best teams in the NFL. But this Dolphins team is week in, week out. Now, granted, they will have played the three of, like, what, top nine teams in the NFL?
Yeah, I was going to say Dallas is a good team. I'm not taking anything away from
Dallas.
Dallas
is not
an elite team. For a team like the Cowboys, it's probably, like, borderline top ten in the NFL. Not an elite team, but a good team. To be laying over three touchdowns, it really shows you just how bad the Miami Dolphins are. Because while the Cowboys are a good team, they're certainly not in the class of New England or Kansas City. I don't think anybody would argue with that. And they're still a three-touchdown favorite here at home.
Well, almost be careful what you wish for, because you and I talked all along and, like, laughed that Indy tried to win that game against Jacksonville in the year that Andrew Luck was coming out. But, like, do you blame the Dolphins for what they're doing?
No, not at all. I mean, the Dolphins were a team that were sort of stuck in that middle ground. We always talk about how you don't want to be there at any sport. I always complain about how the Redskins have been there for 20 years. And Miami is just, they're just saying, we're just going to be awful. They're going to be awful next year. But they're going to probably come out of this thing in 2022, maybe 2023, with a whole group of good young players. And I think especially in Miami with the favorable income tax laws and a lot of free agents are going to want to live in South Beach, the Dolphins could end up being a top free agent destination too. If they can get a young franchise quarterback and some other pieces around him, the Dolphins could end up building a powerhouse roster. Now, they're going to have to pay for it for the next couple of years, especially this year. But I think there is a light at the end of the tunnel there for the Dolphins.
Yeah, they have a stockpile of draft picks. They have the most salary cap space next offseason. It's going to be interesting to see what happens because it's going to take more than a couple. It's
smart,
not like the
though.
NBA where, like, one guy can change a franchise. So is going
to
be.
They should hold on to that cap space. They shouldn't blow it next year. They should just be awful for another year and hoard that cap room, hoard those draft picks, and then when they're ready to actually be a decent team, maybe a fringe playoff team, then spend the cap space. Don't just spend it for the sake of spending it.
Yeah, I mean, they traded Fitzpatrick and Tunsil, who are both on team-friendly rookie deals. But so I want to talk about just your experience from the behind the counter. I mean, you said that New England got more action than you thought they would. And I mean, look, there's a reports of guys like, what was it, 89,000 on a money line parlay with New England Dallas this weekend to win 4,000. Yeah. I mean, it's not that crazy to do.
No, if you've got the money, if you've got the money and you can afford it, it's basically a free $4,000, right? I mean, you can't imagine there's any way Miami could win the game outright against New England. I don't think it's that crazy. I mean, we see it all the time where there's actually value laying these big favorites. There can be value laying a big favorite. That's something we see all the time in boxing, where the public comes in on the dog and it pushes the price down, and there's actually great value coming on the favorite the other way. I see a fight like that coming in November, by the way. But we'll talk about that when we get closer to that fight. But, there can absolutely be value on the favorites on the money lines.
So I have a buddy, and he's not huge into gambling, but he knows, like, the point spreads or whatever. He's like, these games should be off the board. This is, like, disgraceful to the league. Have you guys talked about any of that? But I think, never the case, right? You're going to have to put up lines.
So I do a show with, you know, Kelly Stewart, obviously. I do a show with Kelly called Kelly and Murray, and she wanted us to answer questions in, like, a mailbag segment. And one of the questions was, would you guys ever consider taking a game off the board because it's too lopsided? And the answer is absolutely not. No matter what the matchup is, there's always a spread for it. You can always, like Alabama playing these teams that have no chance against them, we put up a spread of, you know, 50-some points. There's always a number that you can attach to it. We have the potential to see the highest numbers we've ever seen in the NFL this year with this Miami team. But there's still going to be a number.
I agree. I mean, look, we put up point spreads and odds for hot dog eating contests. And everything else.
There's like, always a number,
there's
man.
There's always a number. If I golfed against Brooks Koepka, there's a number. Yeah. There's an amount of strokes he would have to give me. And
if
that's
you
the
were
beauty
playing
of
quarterback for the Jets, if DK was playing QB for the Jets on Sunday against New England, we could come up with a number for it. There'd always be a number.
Exactly. It's lower limits. You got to let the market solidify, but there's always something. And that's why you guys are always asked to, you know, make a line with, you know, Alabama versus Miami or whatever it is. There is a number. Now, you have to set – I always ask questions like, all right, is every player allowed like $1 million if they win? There has to be – part of the rules is, are they all incentivized to dominate, like to try their hardest? That's like if LeBron and I played one-on-one to 100, what would I get a point? He has to, like, when he's up 99-0, be trying his hard.
Yeah, no, and there's certainly a motivation factor. And I will say this, I don't expect the players on the Dolphins to tank. You got to think a lot of these guys on the Dolphins roster are playing for a future job, whether it's in Miami next year or another NFL team. It's food on the table for them, literally. They're playing for their livelihoods. I don't think the players on the Dolphins are just going to stop trying. They don't have the ability to beat the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys are just too much better than they are.
It is interesting how different it is, because usually this NFL, the league known for parity, has such balanced point spreads, if you will, and such balanced sort of, you know, like this week last year, the Bills won as like 17-point dogs at Minnesota.
Yeah, and we should mention the Jets-Patriots game, sort of an outlier, because the Jets are down to their third-string quarterback and they're playing on the road against a very good New England team. The Miami line is the real issue. It's because Miami is intentionally tanking. The Jets aren't intentionally tanking. They're just down to a third-string QB. Well, there's nothing you can do about that.
And you guys are now offering 20,000 to 1 odds, and I asked Ed Sammons. He's like, basically because we want to offer fair odds for a team that's not trying.
You're talking about the Dolphins win the Super Bowl?
Yes.
Yeah, the great David Purdom texted me yesterday, asked me how many tickets we'd taken on that. And at the time, we'd taken like 6 bets. The biggest one was for $10. I'm going to pull it up right now. I'll give you a live look in here. Still
that,
6.
That is the largest odds ever offered after 2 weeks.
Yeah, and we haven't taken anything more since I told Mr. Purdom that yesterday. But yeah, 6 people there. The bets are like $10, $5, $2. I still think the people would be better off donating that to a charity of their choice, but it's not my money. I can't tell people how to spend their money.
Well, maybe you guys should donate it.
Hey, we can't afford to donate anything after that Browns game on Sunday, believe me, or Monday.
Hey, by the way, the largest point spread, this one got trimmed from the article, is 28 in 1966. Johnny Unitas' Colts were facing the expansion Atlanta Falcons, who were 0-8, I think, at the time, whatever week it was. They won 19-7, so they did not cover the 28. So that is the largest point spread we've ever had. And who knows? Who knows what happens with this Dolphins team, especially Week 17 at Foxborough. If the Patriots need a win or whatever, maybe it gets that high depending on how bad Miami is.
And I think the Patriots' win number this season will depend a lot on how hard Kansas City's pushing them. Like, if Kansas City is right there battling with them for home field advantage and they have to win all those games, then, yeah, New England could maybe win 15 or 16 games. But if Kansas City is not pushing them, I don't think they're going to go all in to try to go 16-0 again.
Yeah, New England, I think, has 4 losable games.
They've
not saying they're
going
to lose 4.
Stretch.
I just think there's 4. Yeah. But that's it. I mean,
they've got
a very
real tough stretch
schedule.
In November, though. They play, like, at Baltimore. They play, I want to say, Dallas. They play Kansas City. I think they play at Philadelphia, or it's home with Philadelphia. They've got a real tough stretch there in like, early November, I believe.
Okay, let's rip through some games and get your sharp action before we get into the bonanza. Sure. Tonight, anything of interest?
On the game tonight? No, not really.
Because the game's not interesting. I was just wondering if the betting action's interesting.
I understood. I mean, no, not really. I mean, no, the game is not interesting. We were at 2.5. We're down to 1.5. Tennessee minus 1.5 at Jacksonville. We're just really moving with the market there. Nothing to report. We have seen this total dip down from 40 to 38. But again, that's also just us moving with the market. Really haven't taken much in terms of betting here at the Westgate, and I think it's going to be a very low-volume Thursday night game. Next Thursday night, we've got a pretty, I'd say, a premier Thursday night matchup, but tonight will be pretty dull, I think.
What's next Thursday?
Philadelphia-Green Bay.
Ooh.
is the first first Fox Thursday night game. I believe last year that was Minnesota LA Rams.
Oh yeah.
So they try to get do a premier game to kick off the Fox slate.
That somehow landed seven because of a missed chip shot by the Vikings.
I think that Philadelphia Green Bay game will be a heavy bet game. I know it will. Tonight's game, not so much.
Okay, let's rip through what sharp action have you gotten for Sunday?
For Sunday, there's been some sharp money on Houston. Guys were taking Houston plus 3.5, minus 120, and Houston plus 3 even. They're on the road at the Chargers and probably the premier afternoon game. And Houston or the Chargers are a team that the sharp guys have always liked to fade when they're a home favorite. So that's not a big surprise there.
Yeah, I didn't like the spot for the Texans last week. I thought they put so much in that Monday nighter. And they got the win, but Gardner Minshew obviously made things interesting. What do you think the closing line is in this Oakland-Minnesota game?
Well, it's actually surprised me a little bit in that it's been pushing up. You know,
really?
It's been pushed up from 7.5. We're actually at 9 right now. I don't think it'll go to 10. That would really surprise me. I think if anything, it would come back down a little bit to more in the 8 range where it opened. I know the Raiders, obviously their secondary struggled last week, but that was against Patrick Mahomes. That's like not even fair to compare anything to Patrick Mahomes, the best player in the league. And I don't trust Kirk Cousins at all. But certainly if the Vikings can establish the run and let their defense dominate, they're capable of blowing out the Raiders.
Yeah, I think this is a stretch where we're going to be reminded how bad Oakland is and how bad they're going to be. So we saw it last
and
week.
The book was excited, man, when it was 10-0 Raiders on Sunday.
Sure.
And Patrick Mahomes is just playing at a different level right now. I don't know what to say about him. I've run out of superlatives. For Mr. Mahomes.
No point spread adjustment for Daniel Jones replacing Eli Manning.
Yeah, and I don't know that there needs to be one until we know what Daniel Jones is. Like, obviously, we know Eli Manning is terrible at this stage in his career. That's well documented. We don't really know what Daniel Jones is yet. We're going to find out a little bit about it on Sunday. It's a little surprising the number is that high because I don't think Tampa Bay is very good, but it's hard to back the New York Giants right now, and really no one's betting either team in that game here at the Westgate.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that number to come down. I'm going to bet Tampa. I think Jones was amplified by the, you know, vanilla defenses of the preseason. But I don't think the line's going up, so I'm just going to wait. So if you like the Bucks out there, I would wait. It's definitely going to 6, but it may even come under 6. I mean, I'd be shocked.
I'd be very surprised if it went to 7. I'll agree with you there.
Yeah. What about these other quarterbacks? What do we know about Bridgewater? I mean, look, obviously getting thrown in the middle of a game where he hadn't practiced with the ones. And he is, you know, at the Rams. That's different than, all right, so all week, you know, you're starting, but you got to go to Seattle now, back-to-back road games here.
Yeah, and I think you already hit on it. What I was going to say is that Bridgewater was kind of thrown into the mix there on Sunday. This week he gets a full week of reps with the number one starters. And don't forget, the Saints also have the option of Taysom Hill. So they can throw a lot of different packages at the Seattle defense, different looks with the two different quarterbacks. Right now, we got about a 12-1 ticket count on Seattle.
Mm.
I actually like the Saints. I think the Saints might be worth a look. They're getting 4 right now here. Looks like 4 is pretty much the market number everywhere. I see 1, 4.5 at the Mirage. But for the most part, everybody's at 4. We saw a sharp bet come in this morning. Saints plus 3 flat for the first half. So there has been some sharp action on New Orleans in this spot, and I think they might be worth a look in the afternoon.
Yeah, I just hate the spot because they had put so much into that game with the Rams, the revenge of the NFC Championship game, and now.
And then going back to the West Coast.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a bad spot. But I do agree that there's no way I would lay the 4 with, I think, as a mediocre Seattle team. So, what about these other injuries? Okay, so Carolina, Arizona, you guys are off the board. Obviously, it's a huge swing if Cam Newton's back. But is non-running
Cam Newton
much different than Kyle Allen?
Newton's not going to play. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. I think it's most likely, let's say. We put up the Super Contest number yesterday. You know, we have to make a number every Wednesday. We made Arizona minus 3, thinking that Kyle Allen would start for the Carolina Panthers. And I think it's certainly trending that way based on everything I'm seeing on Twitter.
That's an interesting game. Can't lay 3 with Arizona. It's just that simple.
I can't bet on betting on Cliff Kingsbury right now would go against everything I stand for, DK. the guy kicks field goals at the 2-yard line. So the hotshot offensive mind from Texas Tech is kicking 3 field goals from inside the 5-yard line in one game. Go figure that.
I can't comment on it. There's nothing that makes sense.
It's beyond belief. I think he would have been the last guy of the new head coaching hires in the NFL this year. I think he would have been the last one. I think I would have expected to do stuff like that.
Zane Gonzalez is 7 of 7. He's maybe padding the stats for Zane Gonzalez.
Yeah, trying to prop up Zane Gonzalez's MVP candidacy.
You know what the average distance of his field goals is this year?
24.
27.
Yeah, average. I mean, that's not a good sign if you've got a 7 made field goals with an average of 27.
He's 5 for 5 between 20 and 29.
You shouldn't have 5 attempts between 20 and 29.
In 2 games.
Not in 2 games.
Pittsburgh at San Francisco. This game is compelling because Pittsburgh's going all in, if you will, on Minkah Fitzpatrick, acquiring him. Now, he's obviously signed beyond this year. It's not a rental. But the Mason Rudolph, I mean, this is a lot of points, man, in San Francisco.
You know, if this was almost any other organization, I would be very critical of that trade. But I trust the Steelers. If they think this guy is worth what will most likely be a middle first-round draft choice, I don't think Pittsburgh is going to completely bottom out and be like a top-5 pick going to the Dolphins. But they're also certainly not going to make the playoffs with Mason Rudolph as their QB. So the Steelers front office looks like they think a mid-first-round draft choice is worth Minkah Fitzpatrick. And I think the Steelers front office deserves the benefit of the doubt. As far as the game on Sunday, you're looking at probably a 6.5-7-point line move here going from Roethlisberger to Mason Rudolph. The 49ers, the schedule has broke really well for them so far. I don't think we really know what they are yet, but I do think we'll learn a little bit more about them on Sunday, depending on how easily they take care of the Steelers team at home.
Before we get to the Sunday night game, where do you think you'll need what will be the biggest like swing games for the book?
We're going to need the Jets against the New England Patriots. That's pretty standard stuff. We didn't touch on this game at all yet. Green Bay, Denver. We've got about a 13.5-1 ticket count on Green Bay here, but the numbers actually come down a little bit. We're at +7.5, -120 on the Broncos. I think there's good value on Denver in this spot. I think Green Bay is a little bit overvalued right now. They kind of escaped that Chicago game, the opening Thursday game, and they did escape last week against Minnesota. Kirk Cousins threw that game away with some very poor decision-making, typical Kirk Cousins fashion. I think this number is a little bit inflated. I don't know that Green Bay is quite as good as this number indicates. And I can tell you right now, Denver is a side we're really going to need big. And right now, the way it sets up, we also need the Atlanta Falcons. We had a guy come in recently, bet $20,000 on the Colts. But I think that a $20,000 bet really won't be that big by Sunday. So that game will probably end up being a little bit more even by the time we get to kickoff.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure from Bob Lee as we go to this Sunday night game. So a solid 3 here with the Rams on the road. And we touched on it. Baker Mayfield does not look good. Missed a lot of guys on Monday night. And obviously the Browns laid an egg on opening weekend with the Titans. I'm curious to see how Mayfield handles this Rams pressure. And I'm also curious to see how Goff looks against this Cleveland pressure. It's a really interesting game. I cannot get involved in this one.
Yeah, and right now we got about a 10-1 ticket count on the Rams, and Cleveland will be our biggest need of the day Sunday. Everybody's going to bet on the Rams, but I'm not that convinced that the Rams are that good yet, DK. Seriously, like you look at that Carolina game, kind of escaped that game there in the end. In Carolina, the next week showed themselves to be a pretty weak team. And then even the game this past Sunday against the Saints, I know the Rams won the game pretty easily on the scoreboard, but a very, very poor call that went against the Saints that should have been a defensive touchdown for New Orleans was wiped out, and then Drew Brees gets hurt in the game. So a lot has broke the Rams' way for them to be 2-0 so far this season. I don't know that there's much value. We've got the Rams -3, -120 right now. I don't think there's any value at that number, but I can tell you the public is piling in on the Rams.
Well said. I mean, that's really – I think the Rams are, I guess, better than the people getting them credit for. It sounds like the public agrees, but
yeah, I don't want to dismiss the Rams because I think they're so well coached, and I know they've got a lot of top shelf star players. But you already said it really well. I mean, Jared Goff has not looked good. There's nothing more important than the quarterback position, and the Rams are still a team that has mediocre quarterback play.
But how good is Cleveland?
I don't know. I mean, on paper they've got all kinds of talent, but certainly, we don't want to draw too many conclusions from that win over a Jets team that was down to its third-string QB. Cleveland is a team that I think the jury is still out on them.
Okay, and if in Miami-Dallas game, Jets-New England game, if you had to pick one bet involving those teams, team total, four over-unders, what would you have to take?
I got to make a pick on those games? Well, I'll cheat. We've seen sharp money on the under in the Jets Patriots game.
Yeah.
So that total's gone from 47 to 43.5. I don't like it as much at 43.5 as I did earlier in the week, but I would say some sharp money there. It looks like you can still get 44 on the under. I'd probably go there.
How about the team total under 11 for the Jets?
Under 11? I mean, it's hard to stay under a number that low. I mean, the Jets maybe could get a score at the end of a blowout game, a disinterested Patriots.
Will
defense.
They? I mean, Miami's passing with 2 minutes and change left. I mean, with Brady still in the game.
Yeah.
I don't think they let up.
That's true.
And their defense and their secondary, it's not like they're going to do anything. I don't know. I don't think the Jets get much besides a couple field goals.
If I had to play one of those games, I'd go under in the New England game. Okay. That would be my
final
answer.
Let's get to the bankroll, baby. Let's get to the baby bankroll bonanza.
You can call me whatever you want.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
All right, we're dipping our toe in. Mr. Director, you went 1-1 last week, right, with the Falcons and then also the Dolphins.
Yeah, I'm right in that meaty part of the curve. I'm not showing off. I'm not doing too well either.
I went 1-1 as well, lost some juice, lost a 100, like 20-cent juice. So I'm down 500 so far.
For what am I? I'm down $100. I lost $50 each week.
Correct.
That's fair.
I had a nice scalp on that opening night game, but yeah, I've juiced myself. So, and I'm under 500 because I had the I went 1-2 or whatever I did. Okay, all right, my friend.
I'm only given two plays this week too. I don't know if you want me to go first or if you're going to
go
first, but I'm going to give you two plays, two straight bets, two sides, $500 again. Indianapolis. I'm going to take Indianapolis -1.5. I mentioned earlier that we took a $20,000 bet on the Colts, but we've got a pretty heavy ticket count on the underdog Atlanta Falcons, about 3-1 on the Falcons right now. I like Frank Reich. I got a lot of faith in Frank Reich. I'm going to look for Adam Vinatieri to bounce back. I think he's even going to make all of his extra points this week. So I'll go Falcons -1.5 for 550 to win five.
Can't fault you there. I actually really like Tampa, but I'm just going to wait for the number. I will be doing a Twitter update. And I know people don't like that.
I will stay tuned.
People know
who doesn't like that.
Just know I'm on the Bucks. I'm on the Bucks.
People don't like it when you tweet out picks. What's wrong with that?
Well, I think it's more like the spirit of the game. I don't know. People don't understand live wagering. I guess I don't know. I'm trying to be, you know, like we talked about it last podcast.
Everybody's a critic, DK.
Well, that's fine. I mean, look, there's a lot of people out there. If I only get a couple snarky comments, it's actually a win when you factor in the math of all the people that could be tweeting at me. But no, look.
You don't pay somebody to read your social media for you.
No, what do you
I
mean?
Thought you were.
Who does that?
I thought you. I don't know. I thought you were so big time that you.
No,
had
you have
that
people.
You
have people, Mr. Executive Director.
No, I don't have people. Kelly Stewart has people that sift through her stuff.
Oh, is that
I'm
right?
I don't have a. I just ignore everybody. I don't. Okay. It's easier that way.
Okay, so I'm gonna look to maybe play the. I guess I got no plays on the pod. I mean. I have opinions on all this stuff. I don't trust Philly. I want to like tease Philly, but they're banged up. They didn't even have a full practice on Wednesday like they normally do.
Philly very banged up. We didn't talk about that game. You're absolutely right. The money in that game, very split right now. The Eagles are a very banged up team going home. They're laying 6 to the Lions. But I got to say this. If you don't make a pick on this show, I'm going to create like a troll account just to troll you and be like, dude, you can't even come up with one pick this week?
Look, I like Cincy as well, but they're banged up. I think the spot is great for the Bengals. I don't see Buffalo. That's a lot of points for Buff, but I can't back them. Atlanta, as much as I don't want to jump on Indy, I lean to the Vikings in a blowout of the Raiders. It's usually a reliable situation. So maybe that'll be my – so I'm definitely going to have plays in the bankroll bonanza. I'm going to wait for this Bucks line to come down. Maybe I'll just do the entire bankroll in a money line parlay with New England and Miami, Dallas.
No, that is
why.
No, do your entire bankroll in a money line parlay. I do not think that's a good idea.
Why? No. I'll win like $80
of the Patriots and the Cowboys.
Yeah, of our baby bankroll.
You trying to build up comp dollars in the baby bankroll bonanza here? Is that what the end game is?
So
I don't think that's a good idea.
I might do Minnesota. I mean, their defense is obviously really strong, and I don't think Oakland's going to be able to do anything. And Murray, I think so. Basically, that's what I'm telling the people here. I'm waiting for the Bucks line to come down. And why don't I do this? Why don't I do a nickel on the Vikings minus 9?
You got to do something. Otherwise, I was going to encourage listeners to set up burner accounts to troll you.
Look, I'm waiting for the right line. The Bucs game is not going up to 7. I'm waiting for it to come down.
Probably not. Okay. So you're waiting on the Bucs. You're giving out the Vikings minus the 9 points.
Yeah, I'll lay the 9 with the Vikings. And there's some totals I have my eye on. I liked your under. I like the team total under in the Jets. Miami team total. I mean, there could be some first half plays here, too. I got to sift through it here.
Let me give you my other play. It's
Please.
A play that I gave to Mr. Musburger.
Ooh,
I gave Mr.
Yeah.
Musburger this pick. Denver plus 7.5. Now, the juice, unfortunately for me, the juice is now minus 120. I'm going to play it anyway for 500. The only thing that I would bet more than 500 in our bonanza if this thing wasn't juiced to minus 20. Because I think I like Denver more than I liked Atlanta last week. But I gave Mr. Musburger Broncos plus 7.5. I think this number's too high. It pains me to back Joe Flacco after what I saw from him on Sunday. He was awful in that game against the Bears. But I do think Chicago is a very good defensive team. And I'll give Flacco the benefit of the doubt that he'll play better this week against an improving Green Bay defense, but not a defense that I would compare to the Chicago Bears.
Okay, so you're on Denver plus 7.5. And what's the juice there?
Minus 120.
Okay. And then your first play?
Indianapolis minus 1.5. The same thing for a nickel, yeah.
Okay. So look, we a lot of opinions here. I did not get roll up my sleeves, but that's the beauty of gambling. You can go crazy one week. Like in our college pick'em, I had 8 plays last week, and this week I only have 3, and even that was I had to work to get to.
I don't like this scared Doug Kazarian. I've never met this individual before.
It's only Wednesday.
I want the gunslinger. It's Thursday, I want the gunslinger DK back. But hopefully, I'll see that gunslinger on Twitter this weekend.
You know, you're lucky. I almost went really heavy on the Browns and the Bonanza, but I just did it myself in my own little bankroll. But I was almost going to like proxy to get a pick in and daily wager for best bet and all this other stuff because I love the game so much. But I had enough riding on it that I did not need to get cute.
All right, that's fair. Say no more.
Yeah, it happens. All right, my friend. Look, I promise to be more aggressive, and I apologize to our listeners out there. But look, sometimes you just can't force plays. The NFL is hard enough to beat. You can't just be super aggressive every week.
The NFL market is very difficult to beat. We talk about it all the time, but it bears repeating, and we should be clear out there to everybody. This is, in my mind, the hardest market in all of sports betting to beat. This NFL side market, betting into it at minus 110, is very, very difficult. Most pro bettors are looking elsewhere to make their money, and they're not really betting into these NFL sides. I say most, not all. I'm not saying there's nobody that doesn't win at this, because of course there is.
Yeah, you just got to pick your spots, and we're trying to do that here on the Bonanza, and that's why we have sort of bankroll options. Okay, bud, always enjoy it, and enjoy your meeting that you're headed to, and we'll talk next week.
Yes, sir. Talk to you next week.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Nerd alert!
Oh, it's the mating call for Mike Clay. Mike Clay in the house. How are you, sir?
I am good, my friend. How are you?
Doing well. Okay, so aside from the Cameron Brait 20-1 shot, I'm not going to count that the same.
Yeah.
He went 1-1 on the opening night on Thursday for the weekend, and then 1 on Saturday, Sunday loser, and then 1 Monday winner.
Yeah, I'm losing track of them. There's so many
to
talk about.
And Monday was Odell Beckham to score a touchdown.
To score, we got that.
That
one.
Was plus money. Freeman did not on Sunday night. And then the plus money maybe compensates for the Cam under, and then maybe the Brait touchdown as well. All right, so we broke even.
Yeah, we did all right. Yeah, yeah.
We like even.
That's why you take a chance sometimes on those good touchdown ones. You could cover up some other stuff. But we're close. Even the misses have been close calls, aside of Cam, I guess, because that game script went nothing like what we talked about. The opposite. We thought Carolina at home would roll, but we didn't realize he wasn't going to run at all this year, and obviously he's injured now. So.
And 9 trips to the red zone, I believe it was, for the Panthers.
Four
field goals. Awesome.
All right, so.
Okay, so we turn the page. Thursday night, tonight. Now, we're all looking for reasons to watch this game, and it sounds like you have 4 of them. 4 prop bets you like on Jags-Titans. By the way, Jags and Titans playing for the 5th time in the last 6 years on a Thursday night.
Wow.
It is a annual tradition here in the NFL. So fire away, Mike.
Yeah, we're going to focus on young wide receivers here. So first one I have here is Corey Davis going up against Jacksonville under 40.5 receiving yards. I have him at 37. And honestly, Doug, that's probably generous based on what he has done this season and against Jacksonville in his career. So far this season, 8 targets, 3 catches, 38 yards in 2 games. He has just really struggled as they get Delanie Walker and these other wide receivers involved. Facing a Jacksonville defense, we know they're going to have Jalen Ramsey in this game. They've been terrific against wide receivers. The fewest yards allowed in 2017, the fourth fewest last season. And here's really the key. Again, he's going to spend most of his time on the perimeter. He'll see Jalen Ramsey. He'll see A.J. Boye. And check out his numbers against the Jags so far, against his secondary. In two games as a rookie, he had a total of 4 yards on five targets. Last season, 21 yards on three targets in one game and 34 yards on four targets in his other game against the Jags. I mean, they shut him down. They have his number. He can't produce against them. And it's not like it's just a small sample thing where you're like, oh, we should just ignore that. I mean, they're really good corners on the perimeter, and he struggles against them, and there's no reason to believe he's going to turn it around tonight.
So you have under 40.5, minus 125, and your projection is 37?
Yeah, it's close.
That seems like a pass to me.
It's close to a pass, but again, I feel like my projection might be generous.
Okay,
honestly, I feel like it might be high, especially with, again, the thing is, too, like, I have him with a decent target share here as still essentially the number one, but it would not shock me at all if he's not the number one and A.J. Brown is tonight. I mean, that's another risk that you're taking into account. So, yeah, I feel a little dirty about that because it's so close. But, again, right. I feel like he could have 5 yards or no catches in this game, as he did in week one against Denzel Ward shadow coverage. Had zero catches in that game.
Okay, A.J. Brown prop as well.
Yeah, I like this one a little more. Now, the line's lower. It's 34.5. And again, he's been kind of working his way into a full-time role here. I have him at 43 yards, so we're talking about a 10-yard difference. I think it's enough to take this plunge at minus $1.20. Nine targets and 125 yards in two games, so he's been well above this average for sure. He's second among Titans wide receivers in pass routes with 29. Now, again, there's been some talk about how many snaps is he playing, and they have Adam Humphries and Tajay Sharpe's played more than we thought he would. But still, Brown is second in pass routes. He's still getting plenty of run in the lineup. He's also going to see some Ramsey and Boye. But again, the line is pretty low here, right? At 34.5, it's more interesting to me. And I think he's better. And I don't think he'll be shadowed by Ramsey if they decide to shadow with him. So I think it's enough for me to go over here. I believe in the talent and the situation here.
And something to keep in mind is this is the lowest over-under on the board for the weekend. Mm-hmm. 38, it's come down. So when you see these unders and 40.5 passing yards, it makes sense given that the over-under of the game is in the 30s too. So obviously that is correlated. Chris Conley over though here. I say unders and you're rocking it over.
Yeah, we're going to talk about their top two perimeter receivers, Chris Conley and DJ Chark here, and I like the over on both. And, you know, they've delivered so good so far. And that's with Nick Foles, a quarterback briefly, and then, of course, Gardner Minshew. But believe it or not, Jags wide receivers, I mean, when's the last time you could say this? Jags wide receivers right now, ninth in the NFL in receiving yards.
Jeez.
I mean, that's crazy.
Over Mercedes Lewis peak years, maybe?
I guess so, but the receiver's doing the damage now.
Right.
The Titans, by the way, allowing the ninth most receiving yards to receive, or they did last year, the ninth most receiving yards allowed to receivers last year. Same exact secondary as we saw last year. So with this is unit we've seen exposed at times, and the way this unit right now with Conley, Chark, and Westbrook's playing, they could do it again. So Conley, his line is 38.5. I have him at 47 yards. He's already seen 12 targets this season, has 170 yards, a 13.8 average depth of target. So he's getting the ball downfield. That's what you want to see. And you want to see him on the field. And you are seeing that 62 of 71 possible routes he has run so far. I like his matchup, too. He'll see Malcolm Butler from Super Bowl fame a couple years ago, or infamous from the Super Bowl.
Yeah, of Super Bowl fame, I think, is... I think on the overrated side, though, Malcolm Butler?
Yeah, definitely. He's especially early in the season last year, he was really exposed when he joined that team. And then he settled in a little bit as the year went on, but we're seeing it again this year. He just, he's picked on and he's has been inefficient. So Conley will see him a little more than Chark. So I like that one, and I'll just keep rolling with DJ Chark here. 45.5 is his line. This one's not quite as appealing because it's a little higher. I've moved 49 yards, so it's really close, but we've seen Chark blow that number out of the water so far. 13 targets, 201 yards in two games. Again, an average depth of target very similar to Conley's. He's run 58 of 71 possible routes, so that one's not as appealing. But Chark, it's like where I said, like Davis, there's a low floor, and he could be really disappointing and end up off the radar at some point soon. Chark's the opposite, right? This could be a breakout season for him. He's been outstanding in weeks one and two. I think there's such just a lot of upside for a guy with that size, that speed, and now finally opportunity in Jacksonville here in his second season.
So you're expecting more passing from the Jags and more running from the Titans, or is that just I'm just picking off a couple props size you have?
I think it's going to be close. I think game script should be similar for both. They're both, I think in an ideal world, they want to run the ball, but that hasn't been the case necessarily for Jacksonville yet. They've kind of leaned toward the pass. so far, even if we adjust for game script. Tennessee, certainly a run-first offense, but they're pretty low lines, and I think in three of the four situations here, we could try to take advantage. The juice makes them a little less attractive, but again, I think they're the best on the board, at least from this game.
Okay, let's go to Sunday night game. Rams visiting the Browns and the Dog Pound, both teams with kind of big wins a week ago for different reasons. You like Nick Chubb prop here?
Yeah, I'm gonna go over on this one, actually, with Nick Chubb. I have him at 81 yards on 18 carries, line 76.5. He's averaging 17.6 carries and 80 yards in 12 games as a starter, which is weirdly similar to my projection in this game, oddly enough. He has hit this number, 76.5, six times since taking over as the lead back last season. And the Rams have allowed 234 rushing yards to running backs so far in two games, over 5 yards per carry. That's been a place where they have been exploited so far this season. Obviously, Ndamukong Suh is gone from that nose tackle spot there. It's still of Aaron Donald, who can do a damage in a lot of ways, but nonetheless, teams have been able to run against them. I have one concern here, possible game script if the Rams get up in this game, but I do think it'll be competitive. The Browns have a lot of talent, as we've talked about throughout the offseason. I think it'll be close and enough where the Browns can run the ball, and I think Chubb can push for 20 carries in this game, and if he does, he's going to hit this line.
Okay, so over 76.5 rushing yards. Let's go to Monday night, and I like this play a lot. Of all the plays you have, I like this one probably my favorite.
Yeah, Allen Robinson under 62.5 receiving yards. I'm at 56 yards, and that's with 8 targets, right? So the efficiency for Robinson has not been great. It's actually a little lower in terms of yards per target from last season. He obviously flashed in week one, but he's seeing a lot of volume, and that'll obviously add to the box score to an extent. But in this game, it might be tough against Josh Norman. I think Norman will shadow him in this game, as Norman has been for years in the NFL. It's going to make life tough, and it's going to make Mitch Trubisky probably go to some of the other receivers on this team, including now a healthy Trey Burton.
Hasn't Norman been getting torched, though?
He's hit or miss. I mean, it seems like it sometimes.
I don't think Trubisky can torch anyone. That's why I like it so much.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I mean, Norman is one of the rare corners that shadows pretty much every game. So he's going to be on a number one all the time. So if those guys still get targeted. So right. Even if he can neutralize them a little bit, he's going to give up some big plays. Of course he's going to, but that's why we have Robinson at 56 yards and not 20. You know, he's going to catch some passes. I just think getting to 63 is going to be tough, because the other part of this is too, the Bears are favored, right? We expect them to be able to run the football like they want to. The game script should be positive. And actually, Robinson was under this line in 6 of their 9 wins last season, which obviously, again, makes some sense. So, I feel a little bit more comfortable on the under here.
Okay. All right, bud. Look, appreciate your breaking it all down for us. Always interesting. And let's roll some winners here.
Let's do it.
All right, bud.
All right, thanks.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
See, that's what I'm telling myself. It's not my fault when I lose, and or in this case, don't participate to a full extent here. I don't like the college card either, and it actually made me feel better talking to Stanford Steve. He doesn't really like it either. He had to force a couple play. Sometimes it just doesn't come out.
It's
know?
The opposite of last weekend.
Right, right. I and I talked about it with Murray. I had 8 plays for the website last weekend, and I really like Texas, and I really like Oregon. But besides that, slim pickings out there. It's a long season, man. Gotta manage that bankroll. Maybe let Murray lose. You know, tortoise in the hair.
This weekend, maybe go a little light. If you lose, take the hit and don't start chasing, maybe. Weather the storm.
Well said. I'm actually going to New York to see my college roommate, hanging out with him on Sunday. Now we're going to watch football. But, you know, maybe just enjoy the city, or at least enjoy the games and, you know, chatter instead of having both laptops up and firing and stuff like that. Who am I kidding? What else are we going to do during the game?
Yeah, you're going to be checking.
Okay. All right, bud. Good catching up. I'm excited. This is your final game day radio shift this Saturday, huh?
Yeah, I'm like a supervisor this weekend, though. Ooh. So, like, I've been helping out, but I basically said I'm not doing anything unless you guys need me.
Ah, I like it. Can you go in hungover?
No.
No. Okay. Delay, no. Right. All right, fellas, everyone listening, thank you very much. I know it's a lot of volume out there in the betting space, and we appreciate your loyalty here on the Behind the Bets podcast. Let's have a winning weekend, and we'll get back at it next week. And I imagine there'll be a lot of plays come Sunday morning on Twitter for the Baby Bankroll Bonanza.